Today's podcast is brought to you by Balance 7. Save $10 plus free shipping this week only with code HOWIE10 at balance7.com. Enjoy the podcast.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up, named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Grace Curley Show. It is Thursday, or, you know, this is what we call it in the Curley House. We call it Friday Junior. And we're almost there. We're almost towards the end of the week. And I kind of threw it out to my listeners today. I was on Twitter. I was on social media, and I was seeing a lot of different stories. And the big one for me is still what's happening in Del Rio, Texas. And we are going to talk about that. It's just completely insane how Jen Psaki refuses to answer any questions. To be fair, the only questions she gets are from Peter Ducey. Peter Alexander is still staring at him in disbelief every time he asks questions. It's like he's seeing a real journalist. He's amazed by it. He's like, wow, look at him go. Look at this kid go, this one-horse pony soldier. And we will get to Del Rio. And there were other things that I wanted to kind of discuss, so I put it out as a poll. And if you guys missed it, which I'm sure everyone did, if I know my listeners like I think I do, Climate Night was last night. All of the late night comedians had Climate Night. When I tell you guys, do not call up this show and pretend that I don't do my due diligence, because I sat through 3 minutes at least of Climate Night to get small snippets for my listeners. And when I tell you, it was brutal. I can't even, I'm not exaggerating. It was so not funny. It was so unfunny. I was in disbelief. So I kind of wanted to start with that. But the poll spoke for itself. What people want to talk about today is Hunter Biden. Now, if you don't follow the Hunter Biden stuff, the mainstream media is 6 months behind all the Hunter Biden stories. Especially when you think about the laptop. They just discovered, I think it was Politico this week, just admitted that the laptop looks like it could be real. I don't know what it was that tipped them off to that. Was it Hunter Biden saying himself on an interview that, yeah, sure, it could be real? And all of a sudden now they're like, maybe it's not Russian disinformation. And the rest of us are sitting there going, duh, we've been telling you that. This was supposed to be the biggest October surprise. If this was any other time in history, it would have been everywhere. But instead, the mainstream media did everything in their power to suppress it, to censor the outlets that were telling the truth about Hunter Biden, to squash any sort of opinions that went against their narrative that Joe Biden was, you know, Mr. Grandfather, sweet empathizer in chief with a lovely little family. And there was nothing to be seen there. Turns out that was all BS. And so now they're coming around to, oh, well, yeah, it looks like it could be true. It's like a 6 month lag. You know how fashion goes 6 months later? Like sometimes London gets things 6 months after us, or they get a TV show 6 months later. They're really on a delay here. And they don't think we're noticing. And if you look at anything, the Wuhan lab leak, anything, you go back and the people who were bringing up these stories were vilified. They were conspiracy theorists, fringe, alt-right, QAnon, nutcases who couldn't be trusted, who should be laughed out of the room. And then a few months go by, things settle down. They're safe now. You know, Politico, NPR, they don't have to worry because Joe Biden's in there. So now they can be a little bit more honest. They can put on their journalism caps yet again. And they're admitting, looks like it could be true. But there's new emails that are out that aren't part of the laptop. And they're pretty amazing. And I want to read this to you guys. This is from Business Insider. And I think you'll enjoy this because I haven't seen it written out this clearly. And it's really hard for me to tell when I read these because I read this story and I think, this is huge. This is a bombshell. You know, if this were Donald Trump Jr. or Eric Trump, this would be the end of the Trump administration. This would be impeachment number 5 or 6. But I really don't know anymore in the world we live in if anything will happen. And I hate saying that. I know people tune in. They want to hear me say, they're all going to end up in orange jumpsuits doing the perp walk. But I feel the same way most of you guys feel, which is a lot of times nothing ends up happening. But still, it's worth reading because it's insane the level of corruption in this one family and how bad Joe Biden is and how much they knew this was going on. Okay. Two previously unpublished emails sent by business contacts of Hunter Biden indicate that the president's son requested an annual retainer of $2 million to help recover billions in Libyan assets frozen by the Obama administration. I just want to say that for someone with such a troubled past, Hunter Biden, he knows his worth, whether it's his paintings or his movies or his books or whatever he's selling. He has a good price tag, $2 million retainer. While it appears in the new emails that the Libya deal was never consummated, the documents offer a window into the mechanics of Beltway influence peddling. And they really do. And at the time that these were all written, Hunter's father, Joe, the big guy, was vice president of the United States. So if you hear number two in these emails, they're either referring to number two son, which is Hunter, or they're referring sometimes to number two as in Vice President Joe Biden. The first email, dated January 28th, 2015, was sent from Sam Jawari, okay, a Democratic donor with businesses in the Persian Gulf, who was helping spearhead the Libya project. It was addressed to this guy, Al-Rabani, another Obama campaign donor involved in the proposal. In the email, Jawari is frank about what Hunter would bring to the table and what he says Biden wanted in return. This email, I had to double check that this was a true story because it sounds like something out of House of Cards. Per phone conversation, I met with number two son. So you know what I'm starting to think? Number two son is just Joe Biden's son. It's not, at first I thought number two son because Joe has two sons, but number two is Vice President Biden. So per phone conversation, I met with number two son. He wants $2 per year, and that actually means $2 million. $2 million per year retainer plus success fees. We'll get into that in a second, so try to remember that. He wants to hire his own people. It can be a close circle of people for confidentiality. His dad is deciding to run or not. His positives. So this guy breaks down a little pros and cons list, you know? It's like the episode of Friends where Ross is trying to figure out which girl to date. These are the cons. These are the pros. Let's figure out what's better. So here are the pros.
I probably smoke more Parmesan cheese than anyone.
So that's hard to compete with. Not a lot of people can do that. He's definitely top of his class for that. His positives are he is a chairman of UN World Food Program, son of the vice president who has Libya file, access to state treasury business partners, Secretary of State John Forbes Kerry, son. And since he travels with dad, he is connected everywhere in Europe and Asia where MQ, that's Gaddafi, an LIA, Libya Investment Authority, had money frozen. He said he has access to highest level in PRC, which is China. He can help there. I've never seen such obvious pay to play. This is insane. He's literally using the word access over and over again.
Come on, man.
It's not even subtle. It's not even nuanced. Now, ready for the negatives? This is what you guys are really going to enjoy. His negatives are that he is an alcoholic drug addict. Kicked out of the U.S. Army for cocaine, chasing low-class hookers, constantly needs money, liquidy problems, and many more headaches. So even with the most access you could ever get, basically, to the vice president, who, as he points out, has access to the Libya file, access to state treasury business. Even with that, they have to add in the fact this might not be worth it. Like, he's such a pain that it might not level out, which is pretty impressive. At least one aspect of Jawari's assessment of Biden is erroneous. Biden was discharged not from the U.S. Army, but from the Navy Reserve. not the army. And it was never confirmed that Biden's positive test for cocaine was the reason. I love Business Insider. You know, they still know what side they're on. You know, they're still trying to help out Team Biden here. That's a tough sell, though. We're not sure if it was his positive test for cocaine that got him kicked out. Thank you, fact checkers. We appreciate that. But the tally of his positives reflects a keen sense of what he could offer the project. Biden's position at the United Nations meant he enjoyed face-to-face access to heads of state. Biden's apparent offer to provide access to the highest level in the Chinese government is also telling. China was, at the time, attempting to strengthen its position in Africa and had been a particular source of frustration for Libya's new government, which was struggling to free up $15 billion in foreign assets that had been frozen by Obama during the Gaddafi regime. Now, I'm confused why all this matters, because I would think they were hiring Hunter because of either his artistic brilliance or his locomotive expertise or his, is he a lawyer too? I mean,
oh yeah, top of his class, I'm sure.
Yeah, his legal help. I don't know why they keep talking about Libya and freeing up $15 billion in foreign assets. What does that have to do with Hunter? That sounds like something that's above his pay grade. In 2013, Hunter had traveled with his father on an official visit to Beijing, where he had arranged for the vice president to briefly meet one of his partners in a lobby. Such access may, in fact, have been worth the price that Biden was cited as quoting. Because you hear $2 million in a retainer and you're like, whoa, that's some big money. But actually, for what they were going to get from him, it was fair. It was, you know, the market price. Two people close to the negotiations told Insider that the $2 per year retainer mentioned in the email meant $2 million. My recollection was that anything that had to do with Hunter started at $2 million, said one. Jahari and his partners expected to pocket as much as 5% of whatever sanctioned money they could free up for Libya. That meant a possible payday in the hundreds of millions. It's unclear whether any success fees for Biden would have been pegged in some way to those proceeds. The second email, dated February 26, 2016, indicates that the talks with Biden continued into the following year. In it, Jahari and al-Rabbani receive a report by John Sandwick, a Washington lawyer who had served as acting director of Immigration and Customs Enforcement under Obama. Swampy, 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 swamp. Okay? That's what I want you guys to remember. It's the swampiest, deep statiest group of people in the world. Sandwegg had reached out to Biden's team about the Libya deal. I spoke with HB, Hunter Biden. I spoke with HB's team yesterday. They are interested in the project, but emphasized that for them to get involved, the team would need to be a small group of folks that they have a tight relationship with. They do not want a large group involved, and they only want people with whom they have a close relationship with due to the sensitivity surrounding their involvement. AKA, they want loyal people who aren't going to get them in trouble for their corruption. It's maybe I'm overreacting to it, but I read these emails and I was like, wow, that is all we need to know. And I cannot wait for NBC, CNN, ABC, all of these news networks to devote 0 seconds of coverage to this tonight. It's going to be all about what's going to be on the news today. Oh, you know what? It will probably be, because now they have to distract from this Hunter story. They have to distract from potentially putting Haitians in Guantanamo Bay. That's Joe Biden's latest idea, allegedly. They have to distract from so many different things. So I think it makes sense that climate is rearing its ugly head, because climate is like the convenient person, you know, who steps in and just says, listen, guys, I got this for you. You need a little shiny object, I'm here. Talk about me.
Yeah, and that, it'll be that and the laundry manhunt is what it'll be.
Oh, yeah, but they can't really talk about that as much anymore because Joy Reid and other people are mad that missing white woman syndrome is taking over the news. By the way, I find this amazing. I'm seeing headlines in like NPR, Joy Reid talked about it, saying there's disproportionate coverage for this missing woman because she's white. Now, I'm not denying that. You could look at the coverage that white women get when they go missing, and it is disproportionately way higher than black women, than indigenous people. But here's the issue. Joy Reid has her own news program. If Joy Reid wants to highlight some of the black women who go missing, she has a news program where she can do it. So how come it's America is racist when you guys have a platform, including NPR has a platform. They all have this platform where they could talk about it and they choose not to. They choose
racism,
to talk about
racism.
They choose to talk about J6 and Dr. Jill's PDA and Joe Biden's love of ice cream. That's not my fault. That's your fault. Physician, heal thyself. 844-500-4242. We will be back. We'll take your calls. I want to talk a little bit about the border on the other side. We got tons of sound to get to. Don't go anywhere. This is The Grace Curley Show.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley.
Now, it goes without saying that no family should ever have to endure that kind of pain. And the Petito family certainly deserve answers and justice. But the way this story has captivated the nation has many wondering, why not the same media attention when people of color go missing? Well, the answer actually has a name, missing white woman syndrome, the term coined by the late and great Gwen Ifill to describe the media and public fascination with missing white women like Lacey Peterson or Natalie Holloway, while ignoring cases involving missing people of color.
I don't disagree with Joy Reid. I really don't. I think if you looked at the stats, she's probably right. But isn't she part of the problem? She has a show. I don't hear her talking about missing women of color, except for right now when she can use this girl, Gabby Petito, as, you know, a reason behind. Whenever you have to say, oh, this is awful, this is really bad, but maybe just don't say it if you got to throw in the but. Jim, you're next with Grace and the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, Grace, how are you today?
I'm good. What's going on?
Good. Yeah, I just wanted to bring up kind of the blatant hypocrisy in Reid's stance, the fact that she's saying there's inherent racism within media reporting, yet at the same time, the level of violence that's been perpetrated in inner cities over the last 50 years with gun violence, black on black crime, it's not reported.
Yeah, just so, yesterday in Chicago, three children were among 15 shot. On Tuesday. So you're absolutely right. And there's never any coverage of this. Actually, Chris Bedford wrote a really good piece in The Federalist where he talked about how in D.C., a little girl was shot. She was with her parents. And the park that she was shot in was like covered with needles. It was gross. There was homeless people everywhere. And the mayor didn't get down there to clean it up until she knew she was going to have to hold a press conference. So it wasn't good enough to clean up for the kids, you know, for the people who actually use the park. But it was good enough to clean up when she thought that people might judge her for standing in front of homeless camps. It's a complete double standard. And I just want to say something else, because I was just talking to my VIP about this. I remember one time watching something about a little girl who was kidnapped. I think it was like a Netflix documentary. And a guy who always investigated children who go missing, or, you know, young people who go missing, said that a lot of times with these cases, there's also the factor of by the grace of God go I. In other words, if you look at a case and something resonates with you where you think, oh, you know, I would have let my kid walk to the school bus. That could have been my kid, or that could have been my daughter. You know, my kid goes on trips across the country and Instagrams everything. And it's the relatability factor. And while I'm sure that there is a component here where there's unfair coverage, I think that's also something to keep in mind, where you can't control what narratives stick. And my VIP said, this young girl's parents went knocking on every media company's door and said, get this story out there. That's also another factor. All right, when we get back, I want to talk a little bit about what's happening in Del Rio, and also RBG gets the woke treatment. You don't want to miss it.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Welcome back, everyone. You know what, Jared? I'm going to throw this at you last minute, but I realize we have such a jam-packed show. We have Amber Athey coming up in the 1 o'clock. We have Woker Joke. We have Mark Salinas. So I really have to try to pack in a lot in this first hour. With that being said, do you think we could do a journalism in the news? Because Dr. Fauci is getting the movie star treatment.
And now, news.
Very fake news.
I see a lot of excellent journalism being done.
Give me the press.
I'm not sure, to be honest.
How can you ask a question when you don't know the press?
He said that journalists make up stories and make up sources.
As a journalist, I don't really like being the story here.
Very fake news.
And many of your compatriots had to change their reporting and they had to apologize and they had to correct.
This is a golden age of journalism in a lot of ways.
Mr. Biden, Mr. Biden, what flavor did you get?
News.
Okay, so how I'll do this is I think I'll first, you know, I'll ask my VIP, do you want the good news or the bad news? Let's do the bad news first, right? You always get the bad news out of the way. This is the bad journalism for today. And there's so much to choose from, you know. Our cup runneth over with these terrible hack journalists who are really just, you know, Howie hit the nail on the head. They are Democrats with press passes. That's all that they are. And they know it. You know, they're running cover for Joe Biden. And now they're running cover for Dr. Fauci. So Dr. Fauci, you know him as a doctor and as a contributor to CNN and MSNBC. But now he's the focus of a movie. So this is from the New York Times, okay? And everyone here knows how I feel about Dr. Fauci, so please bear with me. This is very hard for me to read. Dr. Fauci, movie star. Oof.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
It was not quite noon on a sunny Saturday in Washington, and Dr. Anthony S. Fauci, the renowned infectious disease specialist and top medical advisor to President Biden, was worried about what shirt to wear. The craziest part about this puff piece is it doesn't make him look good, but you can tell when they're writing it, they think it's a positive spin. He had just wrapped up a White House call, his third Zoom of the day. He popped out onto his back deck in jeans and a red t-shirt under a long-sleeved blue crew neck, wondering aloud if he should change. The last time he had been photographed at home in sunglasses besides his backyard pool, he said he faced a firestorm of the crazy far right accusing him of trying to be a movie star. I don't want to humble brag here, but I wrote a piece in Spectator that they really pushed out, and it was literally about that cover shoot. And it was the picture of him by the pool. I accused him of trying to be a movie star. I think Dr. Fauci is mad at me. I think I'm the far right person who is hating on him. And that makes me feel like a movie star.
I just don't understand how this movie is going to get off the ground. Mickey Rooney and Vern Troyer are all dead.
It's a good question. Now Dr. Fauci, arguably the nation's most famous and suddenly most polarizing doctor, is a movie star in a manner of speaking. A new documentary titled simply Fauci has a limited run this month in 11 cities and will begin streaming in early October on Disney Plus. Ooh, I can't wait. As soon as I finish watching Climate Night late night TV comics on my DVR, I'll be sure to tune in to Fauci. He ducked inside and reemerged in a shirt and tie ready for his close-up, or at least to be photographed for this story. I may get criticized for being overdressed, he declared, but I won't get criticized for being underdressed. Fauci the movie.
I'm ready for my close-up.
Fauci the movie is for the most part a lot like Fauci the man, straightforward and no nonsense.
And very short. It's under 30 minutes.
But the film also reveals his tender and playful sides. I'm skipping around here for everyone's sake. Featuring old family footage of him shirtless and poolside with his children or doing a goofy dad dance. And one of the film's most direct... I'm going to skip that part because now it goes into his entire life story, working with AIDS. But this is where I like it, because you can tell how much he hates the far right. Again, I'm not saying this is directed at me, but who's to say, really? He did not mince words about the extreme far right QAnon jerks who have threatened him and his family. He recalled pointedly instructing the film crew not to interfere with his work. This is not going to be take one, take two, take three on a movie set. He deemed the final product an honest, down-to-earth documentary. Dr. Fauci has no editorial control over the film. Appoint its promoters take pains to note. Carolyn Bernstein, the executive, she said that she wanted to make sure that they were telling the story warts and all. But there are a few warts on display in Fauci the movie. It's overwhelmingly admiring. The lone critical voice among those interviewed was this guy, Apurbar Mandavilli, a science reporter for the New York Times. And he basically explained that, you know, Fauci had flip-flopped a lot. Dr. Fauci, the movie does offer a peek into the tensions when his assistant tells him the White House has rejected television interview requests because it wants to focus on the economy. This was during the Trump years. And this is definitely when they told him he couldn't be on with Rachel Maddow, which he told us later when he did appear on with Rachel Maddow, how mad he was about that. It goes on. It's a complete puff piece about how wonderful Fauci is and how he's in movies. But my favorite response.
What do you think the Fauci movie is going to pull in the Chinese markets?
No movies nowadays make any money to begin with, especially in theaters. You're telling me people are going to be lining up with their vaccine passports to watch this piece of garbage? I beg to differ. I don't think that's going to happen. I would rather watch, so many things than watch that. I'd rather watch the local news or CNN than watch that. Fauci, so when New York Times put this out, they said, Fauci, a new documentary follows the renowned infectious disease specialist's work in two health crises, AIDS and the coronavirus pandemic. Dr. Fauci agreed to participate as long as it didn't interfere with his work. And my favorite comment beneath it is this random guy who writes, when you say interfere with his work, do you mean the 85 times he's on CNN during the week? Yeah. Yeah. Does he do anything else besides hang out in the green room of Rachel Maddow's show and eat cheese and crackers and be like, you guys want me to come on yet? I'm ready.
Is Maddow going to play herself in the movie?
I don't know. I will not be watching this movie. That goes without saying. Now let's play some good journalism, though, because Peter Doocy, the one horse pony soldier, is giving Jen Psaki a run for her money. And I have to give Peter Doocy credit. And I'm wondering if people agree with me. I was a little frustrated with him at the beginning when he started covering this White House, because I understand that I think he's a good person. I do. I think his parents did a wonderful job. And I think Steve Doocy should be very proud, because he's not a jerk, and he very well could be to Jen Psaki, but he's not. But I would watch them and I would call my parents and I would say, he's got to be a little bit meaner. You know, he's got to have an edge. They were so brutal to Trump and he didn't deserve half of it. This guy needs a little pushback. And I have to say, Doocy's getting there. He really is. You can tell he's frustrated. He's sick of having to wear that mask. He's sick of Jen Psaki gaslighting him at all turns. And so he's coming prepared. And I want to go through some of these. This one came out yesterday. We weren't able to play it on the show. He asked if Biden has ever been to the southern border. And this is pretty amazing, because Biden is an everywhere man. He's been everywhere. He's been to the coal mines. He's been to the football fields.
Here we is now, yeah.
He was with Nelson Mandela when he was arrested. I mean, this guy, he's like Forrest Gump. Everywhere you turn, Joe Biden was there. Even if you don't realize he was there, he's like, where's Waldo? You look hard enough, Joe Biden's somewhere in that photo. But yet, never been to the border. So let's hear this cut three.
Has President Biden ever been to the southern border?
In his life?
Yes.
I will have to look back in my history books and check the times he's been to the southern border.
We have been looking all morning, and we cannot find any record of him visiting the border as president, vice president, senator, or even as a concerned citizen. Why would that be?
I can check and see when the last time or when he may have been.
To be fair, he has a jam-packed schedule. He's got to pack his bags for his weekend trips. He's got to stop at every ice cream shop that he drives by. He has to bike ride. Walk his dog, keep his dog from biting everyone. Biden's a busy guy. I don't know if the southern border really meets his criteria for important things to do. So then later on, Doocy was on with Hannity, and this is what he said, cut four.
So it has been about 7 hours since Jen Psaki said she was going to check the history books for a previous, back in history, Joe Biden visit to the border. We haven't heard back yet. And so if he had ever been, and for some reason, myself and the three guys from our brain room that spent a couple hours looking at this morning missed it, we probably would have heard by now.
I know I'm stealing a lot of Howie's lines today. I tend to do this by the end of the week, but Peter, when the phone don't ring, it's Jen Psaki calling you to tell you about Biden's trips to the border. And there was another question that's probably, for the sake of the country, more important. This is cut five.
You're telling us that the DHS chief
has the most recent numbers about how many of these Haitians under the bridge have been sent back and how many have been released into the U.S. The DHS chief is telling us that he doesn't know. So who else can we ask?
You can certainly ask the Department of Homeland Security. I am confident, Peter. I am confident. He wanted to have the most up-to-date numbers, and we will venture to get you those, I promise you, this afternoon.
She promised that afternoon, which was yesterday. She promised. And they are, did she give her word as a Biden assistant? She promised. Listen to Peter Ducey with the update, cut six.
As for the Secretary Mayorkas comment 2 days in a row under oath on Capitol Hill saying that he doesn't know how many people are being released into the U.S. and how many people are being sent back from under the bridge. I asked if we just don't know because we don't know or because the reality is that there are way more people being released into the U.S. than sent back. Jen Psaki assured us that was not the case, but she also said we were going to have numbers about how many are staying and how many are being sent back by this afternoon. Again, it's 9:30 at night here. A lot of the lights are off in the offices. I don't know that we are going to get that information tonight.
He's going to throw rocks at the window, little stones. Jen, we need those numbers. It's insane. And you know what the funniest part is that they can't give you the numbers on how many Haitians are coming into the country, you know, which ones are going on buses versus who's getting flown back to Haiti. They have no numbers on that. But the second they get wind that Border Patrol agents are whipping Haitians, which they weren't, they were using reins on their horses, but let's not let the details get in the way of a good story. The second they hear that, it's like the Avengers, as Yamiche Alcindor would say. Everyone comes out. Mayorkas, Kamala Harris, Jen Psaki. They're on every TV show. They jump at the chance. They're so excited because they think they can vilify the Border Patrol agents. AOC, all these people who've been silent for quite some time. Kamala Harris is the border czar. This is the first time I've heard her talking about the border since she fixed all the problems with the Northern Triangle. The problems, by the way, in case you missed that, they were government corruption, poverty, climate, and she was getting to the root causes of it. Those are all fixed, in case you haven't heard. Northern Triangle, good as gold. Nothing to worry about anymore. So they took a complete vacation from the border, and then this entire calamity happened with Del Rio. Thousands of people, again, not a peep. Nobody talks about it. Nobody takes questions. The second the story about the whips came out, the fake news story about the whips came out, boom, they all were present, ready to go, powdering their noses, getting ready for their close-ups. It's embarrassing. And another person who was ready to go, ready to pounce and seize and weaponize this fake news story is one of the head crazies of the Democrat Party, Maxine Waters. Listen to this cut two.
And we're saying to the president and everybody else, you got to stop this madness. And I want to know in the first place, who's paying these cowboys to do this work? They've got to be gotten rid of. They've gotten to be stopped. It cannot go on. And so I thank all of you for being here today. Write the story. Tell the story about what is going on. And let people know that they're trying to take us back to slavery days and worse than that.
Worse than that.
That is false.
And I just want to say that the Democrats, their lack of proportion, their hyperbole, their exaggerations, it's a nefarious desire to whip their base into a non-justified frenzy because they know it's not true. But this is what Maxine Waters does. I thought she was going to go into one of those rants she does about getting in people's faces. You know, if you see them at a gas station, get in their face. And she made sure later on to say, this was her tweet. Haitians fleeing violence and the lack of a credible government in Haiti are being treated like animals. U.S. government cowboys on horses use whips on Haitians as they sought refuge. That's not true. Why are we following the Trump policies? This horrendous treatment of Haitians must stop now. So it's amazing. We're 8 months out of Donald Trump being president.
Everybody's always blaming me for everything.
How is he still getting the blame for all of Maxine Waters' problems? It's pretty hypocritical. When we get back, we're going to talk a little bit about climate night, all of your favorite comedians, using air quotes, of course. They put together basically a PSA, a very long, boring, sanctimonious, virtue signaling PSA, and we're going to talk about it. This is the Graves Curley Show.
Hi, it's Toby from Cape Gunworks. I'm taking all your firearm and self-defense questions every Tuesday. Join Grace and me for 2A Tuesday, Tuesdays at 2 p.m.
Grace Curley. She's here for the love.
Would I rather be feared or loved? Easy, both. I want people to be afraid of how much they love me.
We still have a lot to get to today. We have Amber Athey from The Spectator coming up in the next segment, but I wanted to give you guys a quick update here. I'm going to save... Oh, we have to do the poll question. Today's poll question is brought to you by Kennedy Carpet. Howie has used Kennedy for decades, and I made a visit there this past weekend. I'm getting carpet for my living room and my dining room. I'm so excited. Everyone there is so nice and so helpful. For all of your flooring needs and carpet cleaning, go to kennedycarpet.com today. Jared, what's the poll question, and what are the results thus far?
Who's the least funny comedian? Samantha Bee, Seth Meyers, Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Fallon, or Jimmy Kimmel?
It's so hard. Based off last night, and I'll explain this to you guys after because I'm going to save it for a later segment, I'm going to say Seth Meyers.
Seth Meyers, only polling at 4%.
Yeah, you guys are underestimating his not funniness. He is really not funny.
Stephen Colbert in the lead at 34%, 28% for Samantha Bee, 25% for Jimmy Kimmel, and 9% for Jimmy Fallon.
All right, so Howie's oftentimes asking, where's the ACLU? You know, they used to be around all the time, and they're quiet about major issues. But they're back in the news today, and I'm going to tell you why. The nonprofit tweeted the tribute to Ruth Bader Ginsburg, all right, the late Supreme Court justice. And the quote was about, they posted a famous quote, but they altered it, okay? So the original quote was, the decision whether or not to bear a child is central to a woman's life, to her well-being and dignity. When the government controls the decision for women, women are being treated as less than a fully adult human responsible for her own choices. This is what they changed it to. The decision whether or not to bear a child is central to a person's life, to their well-being and dignity. When the government controls that decision for people, they are being treated as less than. In other words,
birthing people.
Thank you. That's perfect. That's, need I say more? I'm sure Ruth Bader Ginsburg would be thrilled that she's being edited now that she's gone to the other side. We'll be right back.